Life in a Scotch Sitting Room, Volume 2, Episode 77. The wind whistled down the chimney, and the guillemots shivered in their secretive nests.
Pull up your cardigans,
Mother suggested in an equanimical tone of voice. A government inspector was due. The inspections happened once a year. A kindly man with the face of a zebra poked a stethoscope into our chests in order to ascertain whether we had suffered from the requisite number of fatal diseases.
Has either had the cholera?
Asked the inspector, prodding me with a cold metal nozzle. His rough tweed suit scratched my cheek, and his breath smelt of dichlorobenzene. Mother replied that I had not. The inspector reached deep into his brown doctor's bag and produced a handful of sugar lumps, some of them slightly crumpled. A small squirt of raspberry sauce was added and,
"Open wide, Ivor,"
he instructed. I was powerless to disobey. After I had swallowed the sugar lump, I asked if I could have another to feed to the horse. The inspector kindly agreed and I ran joyfully to the paddock. Over the next 2 weeks, the horse and I emitted the same milky diarrhea at regular intervals. We would go together to a corner of the field where a tall cluster of nettles grew and vomit into it together, taking care not to sting our faces. The horse died 2 months later. I, a hardier breed, survived until the health inspector's next visit, during which I was infected with paralytic poliomyelitis. They say that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but I prefer to say more modestly, what doesn't kill you nearly kills you, and leave it at that. Life in a Scotch Sitting Room, Volume 2, Episode 32. At Christmas time, when other children in Scotland would receive brightly coloured wooden toys or even a bicycle, all we had year in and year out was a snail. My uncle Ezekiel explained that a snail was a much better present than a bicycle. A snail was character building. The fact that it did nothing but ooze slowly across the carpet, leaving behind it a hardening trail of viscous slime, was not a limitation, he said, but a challenge to our powers of invention. There were many games you could play with a snail if you really set your mind to it. You could place it in the high branches of a pine tree and pretend it was a squirrel. When the snail protested, employing the logic of Platonic essences, you could completely demolish your small opponent's position with a few deftly chosen quotations from Aristotle. Demoralized, the snail would retreat into its shell and try to snatch a few hours' sleep. At this point, the sport became a cruel one. To deprive the mollusk of rest by reading passages from Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire in a loud voice. Since no copy of Gibbon was to hand, you just had to make it up, improvising the deeds of emperor after emperor and letting your imagination run amok. My favourite variation on this game was to say that the best and noblest emperors of Rome had been threatened by evil snails intent on seizing their purple, and that Nero, Caligula and Heliogabalus had all been at least half mollusk. The indignant snail soon emerged from its shell and began waving its feelers around in protest at this revisionism. I was ready with a small camping stove, a few cloves of garlic, and a half pound of best butter. The meal was tiny but delicious. Uncle Ezekiel was right. A snail was much better than a bicycle. Life in a Scotch Sitting Room, Volume 2, Episode 100. The lavenders blossomed green and blue in our airing cupboard when the gamekeeper, Gordon Baxter, would visit for clandestine rendezvous with Millie, the laundry maid, who happened to be my sister. Since Gordon was my half-brother, it was incest which was forbidden in Scotland at that time. The punishment for it was to be ducked in a ducking stool until you were drowned, then to have your toenails removed with one of the little tin openers that come on the tops of cans of billy beef. I quite liked Gordon Baxter, so I didn't want this happening to him, but since it was the only way to prevent Millie getting pregnant, something I knew she would later regret, I had no alternative. I went to the police station and knocked on the door.
"Who is it?"
cried a stern voice within.
"Ivor Cutler, I've got someone to tell on,"
I replied.
"All right, come in."
It was Sergeant Macpherson. Father had told me he was a reformed pony fiddler. I must at all costs avoid any reference to ungulate mammals.
"I just wanted to clip on Gordon Baxter, the gamekeeper," I told him. "He's been interfering with ponies."
I don't know why it came out that way, it just did. Sergeant Macpherson was livid.
"Get out of my sight," he shouted, "and never darken my door again."
As I was leaving, I saw the tail of a pony hanging from Macpherson's cupboard door, as if the animal had been hurriedly bundled in. Scotch Sitting Room, Volume 2, Episode 20. My name is not Ivor Cutler. My name is Momus. I've been trying to impersonate Ivor Cutler, not very successfully. Ivor Cutler is dead and unique. I am still alive, but relatively interchangeable. Ivor Cutler is a young man. I am very old. I have always been very old, even when I was very young. Ivor Cutler was a gifted poet and a bit of a ladies' man. I am unknown to the ladies, except the one I live with, and even sometimes to her. Ivor Cutler was a charming man. I met him once. He was sitting alone, drinking a cup of tea in the photographer's gallery in London. He gave me one of the stickers he carried with him always. I'm told he had different stickers in different pockets, some of them approving, others less so. I can't remember what the sticker he gave me said, but I hope it was an approving one, from the approving pocket. And I hope Ivor Cutler would approve of this project, here at the CCA, formerly known as the Third Eye Centre, where Ivor performed quite frequently.